Welcome to the first episode of the Scarlet Edit signature series, Affairs Through the Ages. You guys, I am so excited to bring this series to you. This is an idea that I had about, I would say, like a month and a half ago, and I shared it with a few friends, who I lovingly call my podcast advisory board. And I said, hey, what do you think about this idea? Do you think people would like it? And it was a resounding yes. So I did a bunch of research and I decided that, yes, I think that this series will have some legs and I think people will like it and I think it will be interesting. So it's also a new challenge for me because, as I just mentioned, there's a lot of research involved into the stories that I'm getting ready to share. So I'm really excited to start it off. And so let's just go. So this series is called Affairs Through the Ages. Now, one thing that I noticed most definitely with my podcast data is that affairs pique curiosity. And I think that they do that for a couple of reasons. The number one reason being is that even though affairs are very common, when people are actively involved in an affair, they're not advertising it, right? They're not posting on their Instagram story saying, oh my gosh, guess what I did tonight? And if they are telling anybody, they're only telling a very select few people because, you know, with affairs can come a lot of hurt and a lot of pain. So I think that there's a lot of curiosity when I speak about them or when I have a guest come on and we speak about them because it's talking about it from a different perspective. With affairs in general, usually when we find out about them, we find out because the people got caught. So then what we're really focused on is the scandal of it all and not so much about what actually went on. How did it happen? Why did it happen? Where were those people in their lives that they went down that path? So I think by sharing some of these stories, it sheds light not only into how we are as human beings, but it gives you a little bit more background into how people get themselves in these situations to begin with. So Affairs Through the Ages is the new signature series by The Scarlet Edit. Now, I want to make sure that we talk about not only what this series is, but also what it is not. I have no interest in judging any of these people that I'm going to talk about. All of the affairs that I plan on discussing are, you know, people who obviously got caught, but all of the information is out there. But I'm not here to judge anybody, but I'm also not here to condone what people are doing. I'm here to share the story, to add some insight as someone who has been involved in an affair, and to talk about why maybe some of these things happened. And kind of just muse upon what may have happened had this affair not happened. So one of the things that I learned as I was doing research about affairs is that affairs have been happening since the beginning of time. Literally, like there are affairs on record from prior to Jesus walking the earth. So they definitely don't restrict themselves to any group, age range, income level, status, race, gender, creed. Affairs happen everywhere and they happen all the time. So in this series, I will be discussing one affair per episode. My goal is to keep them around 30 minutes, but I have to tell you, it's kind of crazy that with some of these, I could probably talk for a couple of hours. There's so much detail and so many things that happen. In some cases, like today's episode, the people who were involved in the affair are very real and they're just like us and they're still living in this world amongst us. So I would certainly never want anyone to hear a clip and feel badly. My hope is that they would hear a clip and think, wow, that was a factual representation of what happened. And maybe be intrigued, maybe want to listen to the episode, maybe even want to come guest on the show. Today's episode, I definitely want one of the players to come and guest on the show. I've already reached out to her twice, have no idea if it's been read, but that is my goal. I would absolutely love to have a conversation with her. So now, without further ado, let's dive into arguably the biggest affair of the 20th century, Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky. In my opinion, Monica Lewinsky was set up for failure upon moving to Washington, D.C. Let me tell you why. When she was in high school, like many of us, she struggled with her weight, she struggled to fit in, she struggled to feel comfortable with just who she was. There aren't any records saying that she had a boyfriend. When she graduated from high school, she started taking classes at Santa Monica Junior College. A year later, when she was 19, she got a job at her old high school, Beverly Hills High School. A drama teacher at the high school, Andy Blyler, was 26 years old, married, and had young children. He and Monica began seeing one another on the side. The affair was passionate, and she says that he was the first man to make her feel beautiful. But here's something crazy. The affair went on for a year, and in 1993, she moved to Portland, Oregon to attend college at Lewis and Clark. Now, if you think about it, in 1993, there were cell phones, but they weren't the way they are today. I think, in fact, at that time, they might have only been actual car phones where they mounted them in your vehicle. There was an email, and we did not have any sort of social media. So to maintain a relationship with somebody that lived hundreds of miles away, you were reliant upon the phone and sending each other letters in the mail. So staying in contact with somebody was definitely more difficult than it is today. Although a year later, Andy moved his family, his wife and his children, up to Oregon because he wanted to reignite the affair that he was having with Monica. She became very entrenched in their life. She became best friends with his wife. She babysat his children, and she was a permanent fixture in their home. So for a kid in college, she wasn't really getting the normal college experience because she was so enmeshed in Andy Blyler's family. Now, when I was doing research for this, I had no idea about this. I had never heard that she had already been involved with a married man prior to her going to Washington. I think it's a really interesting part of her story, but also a very critical part of her story, a very pivotal part of her story. And as we continue on in this, I'm going to tell you why. During the time that she was in Oregon and involved with Andy, she later shared that he terrorized her with power games. He threatened to end their affair, which she would then threaten back to tell his wife. It sounded like a total mess and so unfair for a young girl who had moved away and was not getting a normal college experience because she was so tied up with this family. In 1995, she left for DC for an internship at the White House. Now, I haven't ever applied for an internship at the White House, but I can imagine that those are highly coveted and very hard to get. So this, I think we can safely say, was the experience of a lifetime. So what's even crazier, especially given the time that it's in, remember, like pre-internet, pre-cell phones, pre-FaceTime, social media, everything. Her relationship with the Blyer family did not end. Now, she wasn't seeing them every day how she used to, but she was in constant contact with them. She shared about everything that was going on with her in Washington, even shared about the affair she was having, although she didn't say who it was with. She told them all about it. And it's kind of crazy. You know, some of the research that I found, it says that she was having two affairs at once. But when I dug deeper, I was like, well, I don't necessarily know that I would call the one with the teacher a continued affair since they weren't seeing each other. They were still in communication. So I think that's just nuanced and up to us as individuals to really decide like how we view that. I don't personally view it as she was having two affairs at once. I view it as she was kind of groomed by this teacher. She was pursued by this young married teacher. And, you know, he was 7 years her senior when they got together. He was 26 and she was 19. Now, when you're up in your 40s, 7 years is no big deal in either direction. But when you're 19, I'm sorry, you're still a kid. Like, you should not be pursued by someone 7 years older than you, especially someone who is older than you and married with kids. Like, what was this guy's deal? So it's so unfortunate because like I said, she didn't get to have a normal college experience. She didn't get to go off and make girlfriends and rush a sorority and go to frat parties and, you know, get drunk and eat pizza and stay up all night giggling in the dorms with her friends because she was just so intertwined with this family. It makes it even weirder for me that this man not only had this affair with her, but was comfortable having her be the babysitter of his children, was comfortable having her be best friends with his wife. Like, what kind of sick joy did he get out of all of that? I don't know. So let's talk about this before we dive into how she ended up getting involved with Bill Clinton. So a part of me really, really wonders if this affair with Andy Blyer had never happened, would the affair have Clinton happened? And I say probably not. And here's why. So when you're involved in an affair, you get used to things that aren't normal. Things that aren't normal become habits and they seem normal to you. It's only when you're on the other side of it that you realize, like, that wasn't normal. But here's the thing with habits. They're habits for a reason. They're behaviors. They're things that your body and your energy become comfortable doing. Think about it as in terms of exercise or sleeping or reading, any type of habits that you have. You got those habits because you practice them every single day. You got yourself to a point where maybe you want to get up at 6 o'clock every morning and go to the gym. Like, that becomes a habit because you make yourself do it every single day. So when you're in a relationship that's an affair, you're probably not telling anyone or not telling many people. You're used to keeping secrets. You're used to it being okay that there are these secrets that you have because you're getting these other feelings. You're getting thrills. You're getting love. You're getting all of these things that you want that they overshadow the things that aren't normal. So I truly wonder, had she been off to college and had a normal college experience where she had another young boyfriend or two or three, had a lot of time with girlfriends, had those nights where you're talking to your girlfriends about boys and about the experiences that you're having and understanding if you share something that maybe that's not normal and you're learning from your friends and they're learning from you as you're going through all of these experiences together. So there is a part of me that thinks because she was so used to keeping her affair with Andy a secret, she was used to the thrill of knowing that she had that secret. She was used to all of these things being involved in an affair that it made her more comfortable. It made her feel that same type of excitement when she got involved with Bill Clinton. Now, let's talk about Bill Clinton. He was 49 years old at the time their affair started, and Monica was 22. So he was 27 years older than her. He had already been married to Hillary for 20 years. They had a 15-year-old daughter, and he had been rumored to have affairs with other women. Here's another thing that I think is really important to discuss. Now, I think we can look at traditionally handsome men. Let's use George Clooney as an example. I think it's safe to say that most people, now whether you're attracted to him physically or not, that's one thing. We're all attracted to different people. But I think that we can say that George Clooney is a conventional, traditional, handsome man. I don't think anybody would argue and say, oh no, he's ugly. Now, Bill Clinton, on the other hand, I mean, he's not hideous, but I wouldn't categorize him as a traditionally handsome man. But here's the thing. He was the president of the United States. He was the commander in chief. He was the leader of the free world. You have to have a level of confidence to get to that point in life, period, point blank. If you are not confident, you are not going to be president. And so there is this man in arguably the biggest power position in the world who has confidence, who has swagger. It probably is very easy to find him attractive, especially when he's giving you attention. So for Monica, being 22 years old, in a coveted internship at the White House, and then the president is giving her attention? I mean, yeah, she probably flirted back. In fact, it says that she did. But can we blame her for that? I mean, I don't think so. I really don't. A young intern, already someone that had been groomed by an older man, already someone that had been involved in an affair, already someone who was used to having that type of relationship that she had to keep a secret. Like, okay. Like, it was like fishing in a bucket for Clinton. I mean, it was just, okay, sure. I'm going to flirt with her. She's going to be there. Here's something that I think is kind of crazy. They never had sex. Oral sex, yes. There's the whole infamous cigar thing. I don't even know what you want to call it. But they didn't have intercourse, which I just find wild. Also, over the course of their affair, which they said spanned for about 18 months, they only hooked up like 9 times, which that's not a lot for 2 people who are in the same city. So I thought that was very surprising when I read that it was only 9 times. One of the things that I thought was not funny, ha-ha, but, you know, television, you know, I always say, like, they don't just make up these things that we see on TV shows. Like, they're all based on some sort of true story. So I love the TV show Scandal. I think I've watched the whole series twice. And in that, obviously, we see Olivia Pope and Fitzgerald Grant, like, hooking up in the Oval Office all the time. They were seeing each other all the time. But so for these two, like, only 9 times. One thing, though, that was similar from Scandal, where the Secret Service would either take Fitz to Olivia's apartment, or they would obviously be watching the doors when she was in the Oval Office. This also said that the Secret Service helped Bill Clinton spend his time with Monica. So I think it is also important to note, like, what was going on politically at the time, just because there was a lot going on. And so you think, like, how does the president have the time to have an affair when all of this stuff was going on, right? So they had lost Congress in the 1994 midterms. His approval ratings were as low as 40%. There was speculation that he wouldn't win re-election. His mom had died at the beginning of 1994. He was under investigation for Whitewater real estate dealings. Hillary was leading a healthcare reform that was failing. There were government shutdowns over budget battles with the Republican Congress. And according to the biographer that did Clinton's biography, it said that he was feeling unappreciated and beleaguered. He also probably felt really stressed too with all of that going on. But it's also fascinating that, you know, there was time. He was able to find the time to hook up with an intern. One thing that it did say was that they would have, like, phone sex. They would buy each other gifts. So he definitely did his part to stay a present figure in her life, even though they weren't physically intimate on that regular of a basis. Their affair started in November of 1995, and Monica fell deeply in love with him. She believed that it was romantic, that it wasn't just sexual. She kept everything that he gave her, all of the gifts that I already mentioned. And as we all know, too, if you followed the news from when the scandal broke, she never dry cleaned that one blue dress that had his on it. She apparently would wear dresses that he had seen her in. So she would hope that he would, like, recognize her out and about. She told her coworkers that she was dating somebody powerful, and she wrote a lot in her journal about their relationship. But on top of all of that, she was frustrated that he wouldn't have sex with her. She felt used when he would be affectionate and then distant. She wanted more than stolen moments, which anyone who's been in an affair can totally relate to that. And she wanted him to leave Hillary. So it was kind of the same thing with Andy Blyer. She had wanted him to leave his wife as well, which, again, going back to that whole scenario, I find so crazy. But back to what I had said about habits earlier. Everything that she had done and learned through her relationship with Andy Blyer, she applied to her relationship with Bill Clinton. She was always available when he called. She didn't make demands. She accepted the attention that she was given, even when it wasn't enough and it wasn't as much as she wanted. She would threaten things when they would pull away. And she was like persistent in being involved in their lives. So, man, again, it just really makes me wonder, had that initial affair not happened, would the one with Clinton ever have happened? So in April of 1996, Monica was transferred to the Pentagon because people thought she was spending too much time around Clinton and that it was inappropriate for her to be doing so. So obviously, you know, his close personal staff knew what was going on and decided that enough was enough. She said she felt abandoned and devastated and that she had really begged to stay around. Apparently, they still had phone sex. She was able to still attend events at the White House. So their relationship did end up continuing until March of 1997. When she moved over to the Pentagon, she became friendly with Linda Tripp. I think we all know who Linda Tripp is. But here's what I didn't know. I didn't know that Linda Tripp was a conservative-leaning Pentagon employee. I didn't know she had a strong distrust for the Clintons. And I also didn't know that she was looking for a book deal to talk about White House scandals. So talk about two people who happened to meet, and one had exactly what the other one was looking for. I mean, like, it couldn't have lined up any better for Linda Tripp. So they became friends. And then Monica started confiding into Linda and telling her everything. She saw her as a mentor, an older friend, and a confidant. And this just also makes me sad for her because she was giving this woman exactly what she wanted, exactly what she was looking for. I would imagine that Linda probably had some struggles of her own, thinking like, whoa, I really want to write this White House scandals book. But then it's like this young girl who's telling her about this situation that, quite frankly, is just so beyond inappropriate. She told her explicit details about her relationship with Bill Clinton. She shared her frustrations, her loves, her hopes. So after a while, Linda began secretly recording their conversations. So that's pretty fucking shady. I think we can all agree that, right? She had over 20 hours of taped conversations. Monica had no idea that she was doing this. Linda encouraged Monica to do a number of things, keeping that blue dress, saving all of her gifts, keeping detailed notes, documenting everything. So Linda, in retrospect, says she claimed she was protecting Monica by advising her to do those things. But in reality, she had a huge book deal in the works. So, you know, questioning motive, I don't think is unfair. She really wanted to bring down the Clintons. She saw an opportunity for fame, obviously money. And she eventually gave all of those 20 hours of tapes to counsel Kenneth Starr. So here's where it all goes down. January 1998, the FBI confronts Monica. They held her for 11 hours and they threatened her with 27 years in prison. Now, can you imagine being 24 years old and all of this happening to you and you having no idea why, you not knowing that you're betrayed by somebody that you thought was a dear friend and confidant, and then being threatened with prison? I mean, what? 4 days later, the Drudge Report broke the story online. And then 9 days after that, Clinton was on TV saying his famous line, "I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Monica Lewinsky." At the time, Monica was hiding in her mother's apartment. She couldn't leave the house. The media was everywhere. And I can't imagine. We see it on TV, right? Where something big happens and reporters are camped out in somebody's front yard. Like, that sounds awful. So all of the evidence starts compounding. The blue dress with the stain on it, Linda Tripp's tapes, and all of the Secret Service logs of her coming in and out of the White House. That's another thing, right? They log people that come in and out of there. So if they're able to subpoena those records, boom, you see every time she's coming in and coming out and how long she's there. And I would imagine that sometimes it was probably at strange hours, maybe not work hours, or maybe when there were government shutdowns and like, why is an intern here when everything is shut down? Ay, ay, ay. So between July and August of 1998, Monica was granted immunity and she testified for 8 hours in front of a grand jury. Now, I have never had to testify in front of a grand jury. Thank you. And I hope I never have to. But could you imagine having to do that and having them ask all of these intimate details about your sexual relations with the president of the United States? Like, I don't want to share intimate details about sexual relations with anybody, let alone in front of a grand jury, let alone with someone who is old enough to be my father, more than twice my age, and the president of the United States. In September, the Star Report, there were 445 pages of explicit details posted online. Yikes. So her sex life essentially became global entertainment. I mean, I was in my third year of college in 1998. I remember all of this happening. And, you know, again, at the time, the internet was not what it is today. There was no social media, but we relied on our celebrity gossip magazines. I mean, I would say there was a good 5 or 6 years where I anxiously awaited the arrival of my Us Weekly magazine every Friday. And I read all of those entertainment gossip stories about celebrities, athletes, politicians, execs, you name it, because it was fun to know what was going on. So anyway, December 1998 to February 1999, the House impeached Clinton on perjury and obstruction of justice. The Senate acquitted him. He remained president and he left office in 2001 with a 66% approval rate. The aftermath for Monica. So obviously she was 24 years old and everybody knew who she was. So it was going to be a big challenge and it was a big challenge. She was unable to get hired anywhere. She had over $1 million in legal bills and her family was supporting her. She was the butt of many jokes. It says that over 300 jokes were on Jay Leno alone. She was in SNL sketches. She was basically a global punchline. She has since called herself patient zero of online harassment. And that sounds about right. I mean, she was publicly shamed on a global stage for years. I don't think that there's anybody that doesn't know her name. She has a podcast now, and it is called Reclaiming with Monica Lewinsky. In her first episode, she tells her own story, and I listened to it, and she talks about this whole situation as what happened to me. And at first, I was like, wow, that's really interesting to say what happened to me. And she didn't tie it to any specific thing. So I was curious, does she mean what happened to me because of the media attention once the scandal broke? Does she mean what happened to me as far as the president of the United States, the married president of the United States, pursuing her and starting a relationship with her? I was curious what she meant by all of that. And I will say, actually, at first upon hearing that, I didn't know about the original affair. So I got to thinking, I was like, well, you were a willing participant in this. But then once I learned about the affair with the high school teacher, I thought, you know, this isn't fair. And I think it is what happened to her. I think that she was groomed. I think she was manipulated. I think she was taken advantage of by not one, but two men. And she became seduced by power. She became seduced by men that made her feel attractive, men that made her feel wanted. And again, when they're people that are in a powerful type position, I mean, I would argue that like a high school teacher, like that's not like, oh, he's so powerful, but he was older. She probably found him attractive. There was something definitely intriguing about him and the way he made her feel. And so then you level that up significantly when it's the president of the United States making you feel the same way. So in 2005, she moved to London to get her master's degree. In her own podcast, she talked about, you know, hoping that that was a opportunity for her to start over. She did stay silent for 10 years. She just kept to herself and kept moving. But it was still really, really hard for her. She was unable to find work. And I remember in her podcast, she made a comment about there was a comedian that had told a joke and said, like, could you imagine if you brought your new girlfriend home for dinner and it was Monica Lewinsky? And God, that just, I don't know, it just made me feel so sad for her. And my heart broke for her in that moment, because it's so easy for all of us to poke fun at, make fun of, say horrible things about people based on what we see on social media and what we see on the internet. And it's so easy to forget that everybody is a real person too. Everybody has a life. Everybody has family and friends. Everybody has struggles. Everybody has things that they're worried about. And to reduce somebody to the butt of hundreds of jokes, it's got to be really, really trying. It does say that she was diagnosed with PTSD and that at times she was suicidal. And I can't imagine. And I'm also not surprised. I mean, imagine not being able to get a job. Imagine putting your name on a job application, regardless of how qualified you are, and just the answer immediate no. They see your name, no. Like, whoa. Okay. So in 2014, there was a Vanity Fair article where she finally broke her silence and called it a gross abuse of power. Yeah, definitely. Definitely a gross abuse of power. And you know, it's something crazy that I've said plenty of times over the years is that, come on, we'd all be idiots to think that this was the first affair that's happened in the White House. Come on, no way. It's just the first one that got caught, and it won't be the last. Who knows when one will get brought to the public light again, but it's definitely not the first, and it definitely is not the last. I just realized that I'm drinking water out of a can when normally I drink water out of my Scarlett Edit cup when I'm recording these shows. So why don't I show you? It's water from a spring in Georgia. It's called Freebird. So on LinkedIn, I'm connected with so many entrepreneurs and founders, and I know the founder of Freebird. When he first launched it, I was like, well, I'll try it. Why not? So I bought some and I was like, wow, it's actually really good. So I bought it again. Anyway, I thought I would just tell you. And like, no, this is not sponsored. This is just me putting my money where my mouth is, drinking some water that was made by a guy that I think is really cool. Freebird, Southern Spring Water. It's on Amazon. If you're a water connoisseur and you try different canned and packaged waters, give Freebird a shot. Let's talk about the double standard of it all. This is what's nuts to me. I mean, Clinton remained powerful. He remained beloved. He still had decent approval ratings as the president after all of this happened. It was a man that had an affair with a young girl, a tale as old as time. But Monica, she was suicidal. She had PTSD. She could not work for 10 years. Even after getting her master's degree, she could not work. She was totally destroyed. She couldn't leave the house. She was the butt of jokes worldwide. And he was fine. So aside from this being probably, like I said at the beginning, arguably the most famous affair of the 20th century, I thought it was very Scarlett Edit coded to talk about this one and to share this and to, you know, provide my own insight into how all of this happened, why it happened, you know, be curious about would it not have happened had she not had that original affair. I think the whole trajectory of everything just falls right in with everything that we talk about here on the Scarlett Edit. She reclaimed her story. She took her power back. And now she's out and she's giving back to the world. So what is Monica doing now? Because I think that's really important. Like we talk about here on the Scarlet Edit, rewritten. We are reclaiming our power. We are not letting our past choices define us. We are going out in the world and still choosing love, choosing life, choosing happiness, and believing that we are deserving of the love and the life that we have always wanted. So let's talk about that. As I briefly mentioned, she launched her own podcast, Reclaiming with Monica Lewinsky, in February of 2025. She does weekly interviews about reclaiming identity after loss and trauma. She's had some really, really amazing famous guests. Miley Cyrus, Alan Cumming, Chelsea Handler, Tony Hawk, to name a few. She was named one of Rolling Stone's top 10 new podcasts of 2025. And she was also listed in The Guardian's top 20 podcasts of 2025. She's got her own production company that she started in 2021. She produced Impeachment, American Crime Story in 2020. And she produced an HBO documentary called 15 Minutes of Shame, which is also about public shaming. So she does contribute to Vanity Fair on occasion, and she writes essays on cyberbullying, public shaming, and media culture. She does public speaking, and in her personal life, she's never been married. She does not have any children. She does date, but she keeps it very private. She said, "I kind of feel if anybody has earned a right to have the romantic life private, it's me." Amen, sis. You sure do. So that's it. I'm wrapping up the first episode of Affairs Through the Ages, and I hope you enjoyed it. I'm going to be totally honest with you. This was a lot harder to put out than I thought it was going to be, but I'm really glad that I did it because this is not only going to challenge me in the way that I do research, in the way that I speak, but I think I'm going to learn a lot too. And I'm very excited to bring it to all of you. So if you haven't already, please go on Apple and rate this episode 5 stars. Tell me what you think. Come back on Thursday for our regularly scheduled Thursday episode of The Scarlet Edit. And come back next Monday for another episode of Affairs Through the Ages brought to you by The Scarlet Edit. Thank you, as always, for being here. You guys mean so much to me. This podcast is truly my passion, and it is so much fun, and it is growing by the month. That is due to every single one of you. So thank you so much, and we will see you next episode.